Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get shungite to the masses. You are entering the shungite zone. This is the shungite radio show produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Haggy Shack Radio. And happy Tuesday. This is Nancy Hopkins. You're listening to the shungite radio show, I hope. October 16th, 2018. I have Derek with me, Derek Conduit, my co-host, but we don't exactly know what happened to Walt. He might not have gotten the message that we needed him on today, so we're not sure if he's going to show up or whatever. But why don't you talk to the audience for a minute while I just make sure that we're on the stream, okay, my friend Derek? Derek Conduit.
Sure, no problem at all. Yeah, I was wondering if Walt was going to pick up here shortly, and if not, we'll go ahead and go with it and figure something out. There's always something we can talk about. What I can actually do is I'll update everybody on what's going on with the covering of the bees, so we can let Nancy, you know, try and connect with Walt. Here shortly, we're going to start. There's a thin insulation that we're going to put around. There's a couple types of maybe bubble wrap and or foam. As the temperatures start to drop, we'll basically cover the hives and put a layer around them, because here in the extreme temperatures of the Northwest, it gets pretty cold. I know it gets colder elsewhere, and they do similar, but it's a way of just helping out the bees and helping the bee ball stay warm inside for the brood during the wintertime and helping some of the losses from happening. And then there's also other ways. Some people actually put heat around the hives, and you don't want to do that. You don't want to get them acclimated to having warm air in the winter and leaving, and then getting a shock as they exit. So that's one of the things we're going to be doing here with the bees shortly.
Derek, how cold is it there right now?
Yeah, it's actually dropping into the 30s now already. So it's, it's not. Oh yeah, it gets colder everywhere, other places, like I said. But that's pretty cold for here. This soon, I should say.
Now, when you, when they go into the hibernation, well, it's not hibernation, but when they get down into the hive for the winter, they still go out and do these cleaning flights like you explained. Can you explain that a little more?
Oh, sure. You're sure. What they'll do is the bees will have to go, you know, they'll have to take their potty breaks. So they'll have to leave the hive, and they're called cleansing flights. So they'll, maybe once a week or so. It depends on the bees and the time of year and how cold, but they'll actually leave the hive just a few at a time and go out and do a little figure eight flight pattern just above or outside the entrance of the beehives. And that's where they'll have the droppings and whatnot. So it'll kind of build up in that area. They won't go too far because of the weather. And depending on how cold, of course, they'll start to, you know, slow down and freeze up and not make it back to the hive. So they don't come out often. It's not a daily occurrence. It's maybe once a week, every few days. I mean, could you imagine that? That'd be pretty terrible. So then they'll do that and do their cleansing flights and come back in and join the bee ball again, which is that grouping of the bees in the middle of the hive where they try and keep the queen and the brood alive throughout the winter and keeping them warm.
Okay, so that brood hide, and it's like you discovered that what it is like a torsion field, in that they get on this little conveyor belt and they are going around the hive. And that's how they keep changing position, so that the outer ends up in the middle and the middle ends up in the outer, right? The number of bees. Mm-hmm. Bees, okay.
Yeah, keep rotating, so there'll be a constant movement there throughout the day and or night of the bees rotating.
Okay, so, but they're also eating.
That's why we leave so much extra honey in the honeycomb in there, so they'll actually eat off of the honey. They've stored in the honeycomb all year long, which is why you want to make sure, you know, you have more than enough of their honey, not supplemental feeding of
granulated sugar mixed in water sort of deal, as many beekeepers do. And there's a lot of aluminum in that sugar that I'm talking about. So it's best, of course, to give them their own honey. And they'll just eat off of that, starting from the outside in, and then just work through the frames.
Okay, so you go out, you get lunch, and then you get back in the queue to get into the middle. To me, it's just a fascinating system they've got going here. Because if you're inside the ball, you're not going to, hey, oh, gee, I'm hungry, I'm going to leave and go get something to eat, right? I mean, it's got to be some kind of a cycle of it, right?
Yeah, and actually, that's just it. Think of the bathroom break cycle, or there's also there's lots of names for it, but the coroner bees, so the ones that may be removed, the ones that have passed on, because that'll happen slowly through attrition through the wintertime. And so they'll have to do that job for a while. They'll rotate jobs, just like when they're born, they'll come out and maybe start being cleaning bees. And again, there's lots of names for all of this, but they'll start cleaning up, and then they'll progress onto another.
Okay, we just lost you.
Honey. So there's lots of jobs in the winter. Go ahead.
No, we lost you there for a while. You faded out and came back. Okay. Connection's not wicked good, but we're going to go through
it. I hear it choppy.
Yeah. Well, it's great we put you up in the mountains, but why didn't we think of the technology? I mean, come on. You know?
Yeah.
We need a booster.
Something will improve.
We need a booster system, because we're not afraid of electromagnetic energy. We've got shungite. Yeah, to me it's fascinating. I mean, the more you teach me about bees, the more I'm just in awe of them. And I was talking to Gene Rockefeller last night, as a matter of fact, and we got into a discussion of, well, basically I said to her, you know, it's really weird that World War III was fought and it was won by the good guys, and very few people know that anything happened. And most people, if I said that too, would go, "What are you talking about?" And Gene went, "Well, I can tell you that that's true." Because she says, "I work with Gaia. I work with Gaia's energies. And when I feel energy shifts in Gaia, I know there's a massive energy shift in the planetary matrix." And she said, also, the animals, the shift that she has seen in the animals. And then she said, you know, we don't think about it really, but all of the ancient societies and religions, they worshipped animals. She said, why? What did they know that we don't know? And she said, they knew that the animals are actually in the evolution of spirit, spiritually in a higher energetic field. And she just, and I was like, yeah. And if you want to come to an understanding of that concept, that animals really have much more together than human beings, it's the bee society. I mean, it just flabbergasts me how incredibly organized and efficient, extremely efficient. And if everything is being left to their way of doing things, happy and joyful. And just a perfect kind of combination. And yet, each of those bees is individual. They have an individual job. They have, I mean, you know this. I've seen it just watching the bees outside in the bushes, you know. That they're slightly different. Every one of them is slightly different from the others. I can't say that looking at ants, I feel that. But I haven't studied ants like I've studied bees. I might come to the same conclusion. But, you know, I mean, it's just, to me, this is not just saving the bees, it's saving ourselves. And maybe if we paid more attention to the way that nature and animals work, we'd be a lot happier. Yeah? Are you there?
I agree. Exactly. Oh, okay.
Oh, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I wasn't sure you were there.
I got a couple times, but I think I'm here. Oh, yes. I wanted to mention also, you're talking about, you know, the animals and the bees and whatnot. And absolutely, they're here. They're here to teach us. And they're, you know, there's different stages. I hate to use the word more advanced, but, you know, maybe they're a little further along in the thinking, many of them. But that's just the case. It simply is. And I want to mention now, you point out the bees. Well, as you know, and most others aren't, I go to, we'll call them metaphysical shows often on the weekends here in the Seattle area, and set up a table and talk about the bees and how we're using shungite and whatnot. And I bring that up because of the way the bees respond to certain people when they walk in. And it was, and I,
well, I don't, did you, Nancy, did you explain that you got the display unit that's got the bees inside it? It's like two plates of glass held out so that the bees are actually inside this, so they can actually come up and interact with the bees.
You're right. Great point. I should point that out. It looks like a briefcase with acrylic sides, let's say. So it's, you carry it around like that, and you can see straight through. And I've placed one of the bees' honeycomb frames inside, and usually there'll be a couple hundred bees that will go with me to the shows. So I'll go out to one of the beehives. I'll talk to them the night before, let them know what's going on, and give them an idea of what's happening, and then acknowledge where I'm going to take the frame from in the top of the hive, and, you know, give them a chance, whatever bees want to go and take part in that day's, you know, meeting of people and talking, and they'll do it. They'll come up and I'll open the top of the hive. Bees will come up, climb on the frame. I'll take it out. Of course, there's no need for gloves or anything. And they go right into the little bee case, we'll call it, with me to the shows. And what I was talking about was I'll set it on this table. So I'll have a 6-foot, what's it called, a card table. I sit on with various items on it and information. And there'll be people that walk in the room just, oh, I don't know, every so often, we'll just say, that will walk up. And it's interesting for me, and I mention this again because I'm out in the mountains. I'm not around a lot of people. So even for myself, feeling the energies coming from people, it can kind of get overwhelming sometimes for me because there's a lot of people there. And some of them, I don't know how else to explain it other than keep using the word energy. And that kind of frustrates me a little, thinking there should be something else. But you can actually physically feel these people coming up. And then that's been accelerating for me over the past several years. But as I'm doing that, that now gives me insight to what the bees are feeling, because a particular lady walked in one week and was walking up, and I could feel my chest tightening. I'm like, and I didn't see her at this point. I was like, what is going on? And as she gets closer, it's getting stronger. And I'm actually backing up at this point, about a foot. It wasn't a bad feeling. It was just strong and unusual. And then she came up, and then I looked up finally to see what was going on. She had a big grin on her face, just a really sweetheart lady. And she came up just smiling, and she said, I just love what you're doing. And there was an unknown third party, just another individual there looking over our material. And she glanced over while this lady walked up to talk to myself and interact with the bees. And I could only see the third person because the bees are facing forward at this point, so I don't see what's happening in the front. And as this lady walked up, she reached her finger out to the bees. And I wish I should have given names at the beginning, but the third party just watching all of this, her eyes about jumped out of her head as she stared at me. She goes, you won't believe what's going on. And I'm still catching my breath at this time, trying to figure out and work through the physical feelings I've got from these energies. And I'm like, well, I know something's going on because I'm having trouble even talking to you two right now. And she taps her finger to the front of the, and this was about 2 weeks ago, to the front of the acrylic on the little bee briefcase, we'll call it. 100% of the bees, not some of them, not occasionally went over. It was like they ran to her finger. It was the most amazing thing. And if I hadn't seen it or been there or felt that lady's energy as she walked up, I would have thought, okay, you know, I've seen odd things happen, this, that, and the other, but to such an extreme where 100% of the bees, it was pretty much like a movie went over there. And then the lady lost her breath that was standing watching the whole thing. She was really excited about seeing that. She goes, no, you don't understand. All the bees are responding. I'm like, trust me, I understand. I know what's going on because I'm feeling what they are. So that was a huge awakening moment for me as well, feeling it at the same time as the bees and responding at the same time. That was odd, and I'm not sure. Maybe I need to talk to Gene some more about that one. But that does happen. So it's really fascinating to take the girls out, the bees out, to these metaphysical shows or psychic shows, different names, and go there and just talk about what we're doing because of the differences, how they respond to different people it's really unbelievable. If I wasn't there experiencing it myself or here at the apiary when various people come by, friends or family or whatnot,
the differences in how they respond, it's just incredible. So it's definitely that case with the animals as well. It's just really interesting to see thousands of bees doing it at once. I'll stop here and stop babbling for a second, but I wanted to point out too, also before I started saying, you know, like feeling energies and terms like that, it was kind of, you know, oh, you know, I thought, well, that's interesting. How do you, I'm not really sure how that works sort of thing, or, but it changes your world when you focus and realize, I guess my point is, let me finish this. Everybody can do everything I'm saying. We're all capable. I'm nothing special. We're all one. So we can all do these things and just try. So my point is, I got excited seeing these things happening over the years, started experimenting, playing with the energies again and testing them. And you can absolutely turn it up. So it's not just, as I've heard throughout many years, oh, you're born with this, that way or the other. No, we can all, there are, you know, some of us can maybe run a little faster than another one, but everybody can run to what degree they're meant to. And it's, so I just want to encourage everybody to try that, because the world can get really, really fascinating if you open up to it and start having these experiences with the animals Nancy was mentioning, and then the insects and just all of it. Did you have any questions, Nancy?
No, first off, don't ever stop. Okay. Just keep talking. I will interrupt you if I think I need to.
Perfect.
Don't apologize, because I get so mesmerized by your stories and the stories of the bees. And I had heard the story before, you know, it's like, well, tell them the rest of the story because of this woman, because you ended up giving her a nugget. A special kind of nugget. And I want you to tell that, because you've decided we're going to offer that on the store, correct?
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. I'll talk a little bit about that. So we're still at this, the same metaphor. Did I hear maybe Walt kick in? Okay. So I'm still at this, the metaphysical show in the Seattle area. And the bees had done their thing around here, and she had a really big smile on her face when she was tapping, or had her finger up against the glass, and the bees were responding. And then eventually, just a few seconds later, she took her finger away and was just looking at me. She didn't even look at the bees. She stared at me the entire time, just smiling. And I was just getting I don't know how to explain it, waves of energy blasting through me from her. And it sure looked like she knew it was happening from the look on her face.
Well, let me stop you because when you told me this story initially, you said that when she walked up and she was looking at you, you heard in your mind, let me show you.
Yeah, okay. I should just stop pulling punches.
Yeah, stop pulling punches.
Now that I'm all over the radio,
because
and I talk to more people.
Yes, because there's people out there that are so astounding to us. You know, we're just the average. There are people that are much more running much faster, gotten farther down the road, and we have to acknowledge these people.
Oh, sure. There's people jumping hurdles as they're running down the road, and I'm still climbing over them or walking around them or avoiding them. And I'll tell you what, Nancy, so because of my previous career for 15 to 16 years as a state correctional officer, I was in an environment where it was clearly hesitant to talk about any of this or you know, come out and show people or do anything like that. So I'm still kind of working through that many years of that. So I may leave things out. Nancy, again, feel free to interrupt and tell me, hey, fool, you forgot to mention this, and I'll do it. So what had happened, I guess I should just acknowledge, I'll hear messages and things in my head as well. So when she was walking up, what Nancy's referring to, it'll be really quick. Sometimes it's visuals, little movies, or just sentences. And it was, you know, this, I need to give her something is basically the message that was coming across. And I had already known what it was about. What I'm referring to here is I was led some weeks ago to take particular shungite nuggets. I chose out of a collection I have of them. And what I did was took them and I tumbled them with pure sterling silver. So I purchased some 99.9% sterling silver. You can get it in little like rod form and cut it to small pieces, and or the silver coins. Those are pure as well. And tumble them for several days with some of these special nuggets. And it it puts a coating of the silver. The silver actually will transmigrate onto the shungite and put a silver haze over them, which eventually migrates into the shungite, as silver does. It'll migrate over circuitry and other things, even off of your necklaces, if you have it, or your silverware. It's something silver does. So it'll slowly migrate into the shungite, into certain nuggets. And I hadn't told anybody about these. They're just something special I developed and had help with developing and figuring out. And for whatever reason, I had brought one with me to that show. As we found out, that was the reason, and it was for her. So I was told it was for her. You need to give it to her, and this is a special one. And so I said, okay, I'm not sure why I'm supposed to do this, but as all I term it with myself, the guides, they told me you're supposed to have this, and I wasn't sure why, kind of thing. And I'm not sure if I told you, Nancy, she actually sat down in a chair some distance away, maybe 20, 30 feet or so. And I didn't know she was doing it at the time because we had a really short interaction because a lot of people were walking up to my table, talking to me, asking me questions. And so I wanted to talk to her a whole lot more. I wanted to talk to everybody, but, you know, because that had just happened, I was really excited. But the interaction didn't get to happen very long. I never even got her name. But I gave her the stone. Maybe 10 minutes later, she walked by the table again with a really big smile on her face. Just really, and I felt the energy again from her. And I don't know if it was just coming off of her or she was pushing it out. I don't know. But she had the nugget already wrapped, tied into a pendant around her neck. I don't know. She must have had a pocket full of wire wraps or whatnot and sat down. And it was really pretty and wrapped it and wore it around, was showing people it, was really excited. And then she actually gave, I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you, Nancy, but shortly thereafter, she wrapped a heart stone or a blood stone. I'm not sure of the name of it. A really pretty little stone with a nice wrap on it, and gifted that to myself. And that too had the, I don't know, the energy. Again, it's a little frustrating to me to be so vague using just the word energy, but that's what it feels like. It's pulses of just energy coming in. And she's one of these people you had mentioned that, as I was bringing up, you know, we can all walk, and then maybe some of us learn to speed walk, and then, hey, some of us, you know, cut off the weights and figure out we can run. But there's those that, you know, we'll jump over those obstacles and the hurdles. And she evidently was one of them, because it was pretty amazing. And it wasn't just myself that could sense there was something there, because the other people watching would look at her too. And I have no idea if they felt something physically or is just a feeling for them to look at her. But it was definitely unique on how all of the bees and the people at the table, unfortunately, my wife Maureen wasn't there with me at the time, so she didn't get to meet her. But hopefully at another show, because we still go to them every weekend just about to get the word out about Shungite and saving the bees. Maybe we'll come across her again. But regardless, we meet fantastic, beautiful people at every single show, almost like it's lined up for us to meet them. And the excitement and the energy there is just amazing. And that those are all new to me. I'm not somebody who'd commonly gone to these type of shows in the big cities and been around that many people. Usually I'm just off in the woods doing my bees or what. It definitely is a draw and a lure to get me, and helps me getting there, realizing like, oh, wait, there's so many people and experiences you can learn from out here, even in the, you know, the rigmarole of the city, as I call it, coming out of the mountains. But it's amazing. And I have fantastic experiences and meetings with people every time I go.
Do me a favor, because we've got international listeners. Explain exactly where you are. What do you mean by the mountains? What do you mean by the city? And explain the geographic area in regards to the United States, you know, so that they get a feeling for where, and we call it the Shungite apiary is, where Derek lives. So can you do that for me?
No, that's a great idea. So I'm in the United States in the upper left corner, so the upper northwest, and we're pretty much on the coast. So the Interstate 5 runs along the coastline there on the west coast of the United States, and that's maybe 5 minutes from the water, and that's where I'm saying all the cities are. So that's where Seattle's located, and a plethora of other cities. We're located probably a little over an hour and a half from Seattle. East, just deep in the mountains, and the Cascade Mountain Range is just off of the coast there in this area of Washington State. And so we've actually moved from the city area where I was a correctional officer, as I mentioned, at the prison, and then just deep out in the mountains. And it's actually pretty high in mountains, so we've actually got snow already this year on the top of the mountain. So we opted to go out there for remoteness and to remove ourselves and the bees from everything, from exhaust, because that harms the bees as well, to chemicals from, unfortunately, other beekeepers who do treat with chemicals. We had to, basically get our bees far enough away from there, because bees will go into other hives sometimes and rob and whatnot. So we don't want to be around other beekeepers if we can help it, that aren't, you know, maybe natural. So it's pretty far. It's a far drive from our house to, let's say, the highway. If we want to just go to the store to go grocery shopping, Maureen has to drive. It's about 45-minute drive to get to that point. So you have some rough idea of just how far we out. And it's an actual rainforest, much like Hawaii. I used to live in Hawaii, so it's like that, just damp often a lot, huge trees, lots of wildlife, everything from, you know, bears to Bigfoot. They're all over out here, all of it. So we're pretty remote, and that's a benefit. And we've actually benefited the bees here in the environment this year by having them expand out into the mountainside, where they wouldn't have necessarily been as strong as a split in the city, and they wouldn't have found a place to basically have their colonies easily as well for that size of hives. So it's, again, like Nancy was mentioning, so we're in the forest of Washington State, and it doesn't get real warm here, so it's generally cooler temperatures. We'll have our peaks in the summer or whatnot, but we're going to get down into the maybe negative teens this year with the beehives in this area, and we'll have snow. So they reach all extremes.
But in your case, your bees are inside a building. The hives are in a building. They have, these bees, could they have been born into a better situation? Wow.
Yeah, we went through some efforts and took that bee shop you're talking about, and actually, yeah, it's a good 25 by 20 foot concrete slabbed, metal sided shop. So it's a building, and we actually went through the efforts and cut entrances in the wall of the building on the outside and made custom bee landing strips that kind of push through. So all you see from the outside is the little landing strip that we made where the bees land, and then they'll enter through the wall, and it's probably 2 foot long little passageway we made for them with a ramp inside. So if water were to come in really strong from a certain direction, it could go up into the beehive, and that's a problem. So we built a ramp to raise the bees off of that. So any water that would enter from the outside would basically roll off and exit, and the bees have their walkway or hall there into the main hive. So it's completely out of the environment and no moisture. So that's a great thing, and remove some of the pests as well, because they have a longer entrance way to try and get through and encounter all the drones, the boy bees, who will remove them, be it a beetle or a wasp. There's a longer doorway. Where in a typical hive, there's maybe an inch right there as they land in the hive. Then they just go right in the entrance and they're up inside of the hive. In our hives, again, there's probably at least a foot, foot and a half there. I think front yard the bees can protect. So they help themselves in that way. And then the hives, the people will go around to the human entrance into the big bee shop. Now you see, if you look at the wall, all the beehives pushed up against the wall, just offset a little, you know, shooting up in the air, you know, 6-7 feet, depending on the hive. And that's where the hives are, the body of the hives are kept out of the environment and the rain, and they're much easier to maintain. And believe it or not, when I open the top of the hive, you would think, oh, he's going to open the top of the hive, all the bees come pouring out, and now they're in the shop sort of deal. They don't. I can have four hives open at once. They stay where they're at. They're not migrating into the other beehives. They're not coming out. You'll occasionally get the single flyer coming out of the hive, coming to check me out, and he'll fly right in front of you, or she'll fly right in front of your face and go back. But when I'm done doing whatever I'm doing, I just put the lids back on, and there's no problems. And there are entrances, I should point. So if the bees do, some come out of the hive on the inside of the shop, they can exit on the upper rafters. There's openings up there, or I have a door I can leave ajar. But it works real well. So they're kind of incognito. So they're not advertised to the public or somebody or even harmful animals and wildlife that might want to come get their share of honey. So that's nice too. I don't have to worry about that. And that was the whole point behind it, was keep them safe. So the shungite bees are important. I want to focus on what the shungite's doing for them and what they're doing and not having to worry about maybe a possum got in one of my hives and I have to recoup for that for a year. So that was kind of the logic on, you know, excessive protection and taking care of them. It's just they're very important. And I want to focus on the shungite and how it's helping. And it's done just that. As I mentioned on other radio shows, we're think of it now, we're basically complete for this year because the bees are staying in the hive now for the most part, except for the cleansing flights. And all the beehives survived. We've had no colony collapse disorder. And I extracted a small amount of honey, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. No sign of disease. There were no mites, nothing whatsoever. So that's fantastic news. And we're just going to keep driving on and saving the bees.
You didn't do the test for the glyphosate?
No, once you said that, then I start. Glyphosate, I could be missing that too, but the Roundup. No, it's actually sitting here next to me. I was a little frustrated the other day because I've been so busy. I'm just kind of hurry up and catch up on various items because I'm doing various things here at the property as well, upgrades. So I haven't done that yet, and I want to do it right when I do it. What we're talking about is we've ordered some actually, I'll start here. For some reason, all of a sudden, the test for testing Roundup in foods has gotten cheaper. Up until this point, we've wanted to test for a couple of years, but they made it cost prohibitive. It was $1,000+ for one sample of honey to be tested to see if this chemical was in it. And we just simply couldn't afford that. So we've had to wait. And then here recently, in fact, it was just a matter of weeks ago, I think someone maybe posted an ad of a post on Facebook, and we saw that the test had come down. In fact, it might even have been Walt. I'm not sure. So we saw that the test had come down. That very day, I ordered the test in the mail and had them packaged and sent to me. So we have them here waiting, and they're little test strips that maybe you would take and test your own pH with at home or something. So just little small pieces of paper. And there's a process to it you have to do and various vials and ingredients and chemicals you need to mix. And there's a whole process. And I'm going to record that so we can have it and view it and whatnot. But because it is such a process, I wanted to do it right. So I'm waiting. And then I'm going to choose because it was, again, cost prohibitive and we had problems getting the money together for them. I can only do two samples. So I'll have to decide on, you know, whether to choose the spring, fall, or summer honeys. And of which year, because we've saved samples from all of the years for just this type of testing, because we knew at some point we could get it done, hopefully, and we wanted to see how the effect shungite would have.
Okay, I thought it was just putting the thing in there and reading it like on a,
no, you know, it's a little over an hour to do.
Okay, so
there's a video you have to watch.
Oh, absolutely. I want you to be, you know, all of a sudden they'll tell you, you got to do it now. You know, and you'll just get the impulse to do it, and it'll be done right. Don't push this one. I do suggest that you go with the honey from the beginning hive because that one was in the dirtiest environment.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I'm not looking for the clean hive.
No, because we want to say that, well, it wasn't in the hive that's up in the mountains that may be not being even affected by Roundup around it. You know, let's go to the place that you know there was Roundup being used, which was in the first location. And that's a better test for this particular situation.
That's true, because from that first location, we'll just say the other beekeeper that I knew about in the area that had complete losses of, I don't know, maybe 20 beehives, they're all destroyed. He didn't even save the boxes. We saw him just left in the weather. And I kind of understand. If you get so frustrated on all the losses, he's just going to quit beekeeping. That's unfortunate because, you know, we can always start again and get shungite and you won't have those losses. But he was it's not exactly a term for it because they don't want to term themselves, but he did treat his bees with the various chemicals for the sicknesses and disease. And they were easily within reach of our bees. So there would have been, you know, the transmigration that they would have
visited other hives. So that's a great idea. We'll test one of the honeys from 2017's harvest from the Gold Bar location, another area near people, compared to this one. So, and we'll make those results available online, and let people see them, and even where you can get your own test strips as well. I don't have it in front of me. I wish I did. I could have announced it on the show today where other people could get their own test strips, and you could buy honey from. I wouldn't recommend doing it because I already know the results because the feds have already done it. They've grabbed all the honeys from Walmart, Fred, pick your store. They've done the samples, and this is published online, and they've done the tests we're talking about on it, and their results were 100% of honey sampled had the chemicals in it to one degree or another. So that's something to be aware of, and just be cautious where you buy your honeys. I know there's not shungite everywhere yet. I know that. You can buy it online. But if you're buying your local honey and you go to your local beekeeper, just try and make sure, if you can, find one that's organic and treatment-free to keep some of those chemicals out. And that's the reason the federal government has found and the EPA so much chemicals in our honeys. It's really flabbergasting. It's just how – because you think of that as the purest, and it is one of the purest and best foods on the planet. In fact, the only food you can literally survive off of eating just honey. You don't even need to drink water. You can survive off that. And it's terrible that so much of it's being, you know, harmed by the chemicals. So it's definitely about getting the word out with shungite and helping that. So we've proven it helps with the bees, and now it's – and keeping their – lifespan going, keeping illness away, and you know, just the longevity of them. So now it's time to go ahead and sample the honeys and see how that all pans out.
Well, you know, we're pretty gutsy because I am positive that we will not find it in the honey, because of everything that
I'm not worried.
Everything that we know about shungite, the science it has taught us, you know, tells me that no, it can't possibly exist in a shungite environment. And that's because the shungite takes anything toxic is rotating opposite the shungite field. The shungite field is the one that's biocompatible. And so what you have is a situation where they try to spin to match the spin of the shungite, but they can't. So you throw off all of the atoms just fall apart. There's no more toxic molecules involved. And if the science is right, then no, these things should not be able to exist in a shungite beehive. And, you know, so we go out there and we say it without even testing, you know. And I think that that's what we were talking. Derek goes out and talks to people now, and I've also noticed it on Facebook, is that people have been reading Regina Martino's book on shungite, and they are wanting more. They want another book. Well, we've got an entire row of books on shungite based on radio programs, because we've been talking about it for so long. But we definitely need to be able to consolidate in some kind of a written presentation, as Derek is finding, because they come up to him and, you got a book? And he's like, no. You know, so we're putting that kind of as a top of the pile of things to do, is to get a book out. And when I think about the book, Derek, I think of it being not so much, you know, a scientific manual on shungite. That's going to take too long to write. We can write it. We will write it, but not now. And that we should focus on a book that is like, first off, in a smaller version, so that it's easier to mail to people. You know, when you get the book size that I've got for my books, right? It's like the one that when you're reading it feels better in your hands. But when you go to mail those suckers, they're expensive. You know? So let's just plan on being practical to get the information out at a price that we can afford to get out. And so we'll do it in a smaller format. But really what what shungite is given me is I have known for years the science of enterology. It started out with an amethyst pendant. I think I just told you the story, that somebody had given me. And I'm wearing this thing, and I'm like, okay, I'd been in the Army, I was out of the Army, I was working as a maintenance engineer in a condominium right on the ocean. And it was a night shift. So I got a lot of time to research and study, and, you know, because maintenance engineer at night is not that needed, I just have to make sure everything's running right. So I was reading, well, I was really aware of the fact that there was something different with my body. And I'm going, this is very strange. And the only thing that had come into my life, maybe, was that pendant, because I never wore jewelry. And so I've got this pendant on, and, you know, even looking at the minerals, it began to teach me about listening to my guides. Because that's when I discovered, if I asked a question, I got a weird answer in my head, and then I'd verify the answer. So I'm like, what is it? Could this thing be doing this to me? You know, what could possibly this rock be doing that's causing all these symptoms in me? You know, and it wasn't like they said, oh, well, da, da, da. No. Within the next day, I came across a book that, and I think I found it in my own library. I don't even know where it came from. But it was a book that talked about minerals and the energies of minerals. And it was a very basic book, but it started out in the first chapter and said, if you get a stone and you start to get these symptoms, and it listed every single symptom I had, then they said, then you are energy sensitive. You're feeling the energy of that stone. And boy, I tell you, that started me on, well, I'm still on the quest. I was what? Let's see, I probably was 35 at the time. And I just began to, well, again, you know, so I get interested in this stone. I read about it. And now I'm aware, and I come across the fact that they've got a mineral show that's being held in a local mall. And it was like, you know, the next week. So I go to the, and it was on, it started on a Wednesday, and it went through Sunday. It's, to this day, it's still the best mineral show I've ever been to. And what it was that it was in, you know, in the court. It's one of these strip mall kind of layouts. And it was in the corridors between the shops, you know. They had set up all these booths or tables. And there must have been at least 100 of them. Because it went, I mean, it was the biggest one I've ever seen. Well, I went there every day because, again, I was working nights, so I'd go home, take care of the kids and animals, and, you know, then go back, go over there to the mall. And in that short period of time, it was like getting a master's degree in mineralogy, because the people that were there were the old timers. These were people, many of them Native American, whose families for decades, for generations, had been working with the energies of these stones. I would spend like hours and hours and hours with the different individual people. Not all of them, you know, because I was being drawn to certain people, certain stones, and these people were so, oh my God, I mean, it was just like they knew that I was like this sponge, please teach me, I want to know. And they just, you know, provided me with an intense learning about energies and about the stones, about the 3D concepts of what type of stones do you, how did this get made? You know, I mean, all the basic stuff that you learn. But then they imparted, I think, secret magical stuff that only people with generations of working with these energies could possibly understand. And plus they gifted me. I mean, I spent as much money as I could there, but they gifted me a great deal more. They had every single stone that you could imagine wanting to see. All of the basic ones, all your quartzes, your jaspers, bloodstone, all of the lapis, all of that. But then they had moldavite. I mean, this one guy had three big trays. They were like, you know, a foot long and about 6 inches wide, full of moldavite. And moldavite is found in Czechoslovakia. It comes because a meteorite hit that area and fried the soil that was there, and out comes what we call moldavite. A very, very heavy-duty stone. I don't wear it because, for whatever reason, when I've got any kind of moldavite on me, it starts disappearing.
That's odd. I was brought up to be twice this week moldavite, and I wasn't familiar with it. And now you're number three bringing that up to me. That's interesting. I should probably pay attention to that.
Well, moldavite and shungite they like each other. Well, shungite likes everybody. Moldavite, not so much. But it's almost like moldavite is unchallenged in its energetics, in my opinion. Except shungite. So
I've never handled it, and that was brought up to me three times this week, and I've never even thought about it. So I need to get my hands on it.
Well, it's very rare now because the Chinese went in and bought everything they could.
There's probably a reason for that.
I would think.
Answer, well, I guess I'll keep my eyes out for a piece. That's just fascinating to me how, you know, that you came across that as well, and I'd never even heard of it until recently.
I'm trying to think, do I have any moldavite left? Because like I say, when it's around me, I've had bracelets with moldavite in it. And the moldavite gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, it's like bizarre. And a ring that the moldavite got so small it was falling out of the setting.
Interesting. I was just told I'm supposed to get my hands on it, so I guess
it'll come to you.
It will. Because that was kind of odd. I'm like, you get your hands on it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
We'll figure that one out. Yeah, I've been to shows similar as you're saying in Arizona. They're fascinating.
Say again.
I've been to shows called powwows and whatnot in Arizona are the big rock shows that you're talking about.
Right.
Those are, I love them.
Right. You don't see those nowadays. They told me then that there was a 20-year cycle. They said that stones would get very, very popular. They'd be very, very busy, and then it would drop off. But 20 years later, it would come back up. And I can attest to that because I've been in the business long enough to see at least 2.5 cycles of that. Now they're getting popular again. You know, we're not even at the height of where it's going to go. I'm just giving my experience with enterology, how I got into it. And it really was the study of minerals. Because it's like you said, you know, okay, so what is happening to me? You know, why am I feeling like this, you know? Well, it is energy, and you got to get used to using the word energy. They've got you spooked about it.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those things that I thought, oh, you know, other people can do. And I grew up, oh, this person is an energy sensitive, this, that. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. But it wasn't me. But let me tell you, you can change. Everybody can change or come into their own or whatever terms you want to do. Because I'm absolutely changing on a, if not daily, on a weekly basis over the past several years, doing, feeling, experiencing things that only the other guy or gal was doing or they were born special with these abilities, and you would look at them in awe. Don't do that. We can all do all of this. Just be aware, let go, feel it, and it'll come. just like you're saying, Nancy, at the shows, you're going to be drawn to certain things, and it's fascinating.
Well, we have gone into an area of higher energetics. And so people are getting fed energy that is going to allow them to get to a point where all of this is easily accessible. But another part of it is the collective consciousness. For every one of those people that went out to begin with and began to exercise the abilities that they had innate in them, okay, began to feed the collective consciousness. And so by now, there's so many of these people that went out and committed to the fact of, yeah, I'm telling you, I'm reading your mind. Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm doing this remote viewing. I can go see these other places. Yeah, I'm telling you, they begin to share, even if it's only with themselves, that they start acknowledging that these things are happening, feeds the collective consciousness. So over the decades, somebody said something about the new age just recently, and I went, the new age, when is it going to become the old age? New age has been here for 40 years. What are you talking about, new age?
But this, they just noticed.
it's just insane. But this continual, well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. All of this happened the day that John Kennedy was assassinated. Because it was an interesting, you had a whole generation of children, the baby boomers, who in one instant went from children to adults. Because the entire world came to a standstill. And there was a shattering of timelines, for one thing, and the shattering of an entire generation of people, not all of them. But, I mean, I had this guy, Fernando, who did this amazing video. What he put together was just announcement, radio announcement, television announcements, for about 15 minutes regarding the announcement of the president's death. And I actually couldn't listen to the whole thing because I found it very, I kept being like drawn back to that moment in time with it because a lot of this stuff I heard at that time. And, but he was only 3.5 years old. And he said to me, I honestly can say that something changed for me at 3.5 years old. And I think that the energy impact of this unbelievably stuffed up situation, shattered a whole bunch of kids. The links between growing from a kid to an adult is that you ask a question that no adult seems to answer. Why did my cat die? What's death? Okay, they can't answer this. And all of a sudden you asked a question, nobody answers you. That's when you begin to start thinking like an adult. And in one instant, an entire generation, why did you kill the president? And nobody could answer you. And then you find out that the answer they gave you was a blatant lie that you could see through. And so a whole generation was set up to reach out of the box into areas of, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be more to life. And so I think that the baby boomer energy is what also motivates a lot of the metaphysics, interest. I mean, we were the generation that started looking for the guru, started bringing in transcendental meditation. Going out and reaching out to different, the Hindus, the Muslims, all the various religions. Up until that time, you had Christianity, period, done. Oh, the Jews came in for a while. But it's like there was no connection to other kind of concepts. And then all of a sudden the 60s get involved and blah, 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 blah. And pretty soon you're talking about all sorts of different spiritual things, even talking to rocks like I did. So, the study of enterology, and I did coin that phrase because it is the study of energy. Biology is the study of biological life. And to me, it was a much more basic comprehension of the universe than was the mechanical Newtonian science. Now, as I'm developing this concept, the quantum science began to develop too. I actually, Derek, I was at NSA, and so I was probably about 26. And I'm with this. I don't actually know who he was. He was some bigwig in NSA, but he had taken me. He had met me and took me to where I had to be for the day. And then at the end of the day, he comes in, and I went back to his office with him, and we're just sitting there talking. And he says to me, "Have you ever heard about quantum physics?" And I had not. And I said, "No. What is it?" And he says, "Oh, my God." And this guy was absolutely obsessed with this new concept of physics. And I got my introduction to quantum physics from an NSA physicist who, you know, just was like, "Wow, this is amazing." And he's telling me, I mean, the basics of, you know, I mean, the basics of it that, you know, nothing exists unless the human being sees it. You know, it has to be witnessed. I mean, all of the things that are very metaphysical in its explanation of reality. And he's kind of whispering at me, and he says, "But you know what else it does?" And I said, "No," because I'm just like awestruck, you know. He says, "It kind of answers the factor X situation." And I said, "What is factor X?" And he said, "Well, we don't tell anybody, but as scientists, as physicists, there's a lot of things that happen that just shouldn't. And when that happens, we call it the factor X." And I said, "Well, what is it? What's factor X?" And he said, "In the last analysis, I think it's God." This is a scientist talking to me, right? So I had a massive boom, you know, introduction to quantum physics from somebody that absolutely understood it, and an introduction to a concept that most outsiders wouldn't know, because these are the thinkers. This is NASA, I mean NSA. These are the massive thinkers, you know. And so I always looked at quantum physics as being metaphysical, much more metaphysical than Newtonian physics. And as I began to understand and unravel the energy matrix of the minerals, it became more and more obvious that the real structure of our reality was energy. That energy comes first. You cannot have anything. It's like we organize, we build, okay? But what is the structure of the stuff that we build? I mean, how does it all fit together? Is it putting these pieces together and they all fit? Well, how would you know how to put those pieces together if you hadn't already thought it into existence? And that's what quantum physics was teaching me, that our minds, being we're like generators of energy, okay? When we think of something, we actually create an energetic field. It's there. You did it. You thought it's there. Boom. It's science. It's quantum science. Okay? So you got the energetic field. Now all you got to do is make the 3D, just throw the 3D at it. And the 3D follows the energy pattern. And I know that's kind of like out there, but if you can kind of grasp it, and I can't say I got a full handle on it either, you understand that in everything, it's human thought that creates a 3D environment that we live in. And there's just no getting away with it from it. You know? It's the only way the science works. Just hold your thought. We're at the top of the hour. And Walt's going to be here because he just says, I'm here. Okay, so we'll have him back. We'll get him on for the last hour. Okay.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder, 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 thunder,
thunder. Thunder, thunder, thunder,
thunder,
thunder, feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, thunder, feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 thunder.
Kids were laughing in my classes while I was scheming for the masses. Who do you think you are? Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping in the nosebleeds.
Thunder, 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 thunder,
thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder,
thunder,
thunder, feel the thunder.
And welcome back to the Shungite Radio Show. It's October 16th, 2018. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is co-host Derek Condit and Walt Silva. And I'm going to unmute them so they can say hi. Hi.
I'm back. Hello. Welcome, Walt.
Walter, are you there? Oh, no, Walter's not on. Walter. Did he drop off?
I'm looking to see if I see him. I'm not sure.
Walt.
Hello, hello.
Okay, there he is.
Okay.
Hi.
Yeah, my USB mic was unplugged because I had done the backup, which is on a USB device, so sorry about that.
I've done just that.
Yeah, Derek told me about his idea. He just didn't say when, so
Yep. Yeah, I probably sounds just like Derek. Leaving it not, so no, that's okay, because we have many shows to do on specific topics. That's perfect.
Okay.
So the first part of the show, we kind of babbled. He babbled about bees. We weren't babbling. We were having a good conversation. He was talking about the bees, and then I started talking about this concept of having a book. And so then I started babbling because I think, Walt, that we should think in terms of one book that is like for a beginner, that is a summary, like a briefing of everything that we know regarding shungite. And that not to worry about backing it up with documents and, you know, all of the stuff you need to do to put a scientific thesis together. I don't want that. I want a nice, concise little story about what we know to present to people so that they can go through it and they can say, oh, okay, and that they have a reference in their hands when they can go and they can say, what were they talking about with water? You know, what's this, you know, S4 thing? You know, all that sort of thing. Okay, so what I had gotten to was talking about enterology and how I had been actually introduced to enterology through the study of minerals. Yes, I knew electronics and I knew the dangers of EMF and Wi-Fi and all that, but actually understanding the essence of energy is the understanding it's the basis for the universe is energy. And now with the shungite, it explains enterology. It demonstrates enterology. Everything that we've asked it to do, it does. And what I want to do right now, because I'm just giving you a kind of a background of what we just talked about, what I want to ask you, if it's okay with Derek here, what does shungite mean to you, Walt?
Well, that should be fascinating, yeah. Kind of off the, you know, catching them off guard maybe a little bit. It would be for me, but.
Well, to backtrack a little bit on something that Nancy likes to repeat oftentimes, that energy follows geometry. And the people out there that are aware of sacred geometry this and sacred geometry that, and that the different platonic solids represent different dimensional levels. Well, when you look at shungite, it is exactly that. It is the marriage of energy and geometry to such a point that they're practically inseparable. You have, it's like energy and form, because energy is one of those things that for a lot of people is difficult to visualize. It's difficult to visualize something that it's immune to time. It has no, I mean, what is the form of electricity? You know, people are used to seeing a lightning bolt. Is that electricity? No, that's not electricity per se. It is a manifestation of electrical activity. But what does electricity look like? It's difficult to visualize. When you're dealing with shungite, that's exactly what you're doing. You're seeing that marriage of form and energy. And that's why it's so incredibly powerful and it does all the things that it does. And I always remember that a scientific paper that Nancy found where they literally studied the behavior of the fullerene, where they detected three different types of motions that it does. And the most impressive of all is that they were able to detect the thing rotating up 2 billion times per second. So that's beyond gigahertz if you're going to look at that.
No, it's 20 billion times, correct, a second?
No, it was two.
It was 2 billion.
If you
dig up that PDF, we'll be able to look at it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I don't know. Is it 20 billion or 2 billion?
It's two.
2 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, that slow?
That's enough.
And that's, like I said, that's beyond, you know, because gigahertz is millions of cycles. So now you're going into billions of cycles in such a space, you know, the size of a molecule. That goes to explain why it even transmutes light, because light is on the it's I know that this is where language gets so limiting, especially when writers are trying to explain metaphysical things and physical things. What we call light, the thing we see with our eyes, is not light at all. In reality, we don't have a true understanding of what light is. That's why many people, and they get laughed at because, oh, you're not being scientific, when they quote the Seth material, for example. I believe that's the lady, Jane Roberts, is it?
Mm-hmm, yes.
In one of the chapters, when they get on that subject, Seth says, light does not travel. Light is. Because that's exactly right. It is the fabric of what reality is made of. It's made up of light. The thing that we call space, we say, oh, it's empty space. Well, it's not empty. It exists. Therefore, it's made of something. And that's why I believe he's Iranian, the scientist, Nassim Haramein. He has a great YouTube video out there. I think it's like 15 minutes long, where he actually uses equations on graphics to explain that a cubic centimeter of empty space actually has more energy than all the detected observable universe. There's only so much of the universe that has been observed by instrumentation, and he goes on to explain how a cubic centimeter of empty space has more energy than all of that. So how does something that's nothing have anything at all? So that tells you that space is made up of something. And that's what Seth meant. Light does not travel, light is. What we call light, the thing that we see with our eyes, and that it manifests in different colors, and you see the light of the sun, and you see the light of the light bulb, that's electromagnetic energy. That's exactly what it is. It's just that we have the necessary organs to detect it at that range. But that's the same thing that comes out of your Wi-Fi, electromagnetic radiation. And what's the difference? Well, the one coming from the sun is positive, and it has a clockwise rotating torsion field. And the one that comes out of a man-made appliance is not. It's counterclockwise, so it has a degrading effect. And the Shanghai being what it is, the marriage of energy and geometry, it has the power to affect all the different forms of energy, because I've tried, at least in my humble experiments, I know so far it transmutes chemical energy, whether it be in liquid or gaseous form, or forms such as electricity. It affects electromagnetic energy in the range, in the frequency range of visible light. The only caveat was I was able to do it with Shanghai lenses using resin and petri dishes. I created lenses, but the thing that I found is that in order to achieve 100% transmutation of the light, you need two lenses, and they're supposed to be separated a certain amount of time, space. I had to douse for that. So between the two, the work of the two lenses, actually, one single lens will only transmute about 60 to 66% of the light, visible light.
Okay, so wait. Let me stop you for a second. Okay, because you're saying transmute. What's happening? You've got a light source that is going through the lens, and the lens is created by resin and the S4
or
is
powder.
Just the powder. Okay. So, mm-hmm. What is it you're trying to see? What's happening? You're calling it transmuting.
Well,
I don't understand.
All I want to do is transmute because since the source of the light, it's man-made, it's artificial. Sorry about that. The spin of it is counterclockwise. It's not beneficial light. I know a lot of people buy color filters to put on light to do on. There are people that do chromotherapy because different colors of light have different effects. Like, for example, blue has a decongestant pain-reducing condition to it. Red has a benefit because it accelerates the healing of bones, and it accelerates the healing of wounds and burns, and so on. You know, the different frequencies of light have different beneficial effects, but because they're being generated by an artificial source, that light has a counterclockwise spin. It's not beneficial because it's spinning opposite to how the way our energy fields are spinning. So in my desire to see how far, you know, Shanghai could affect energy, you know, how high up can we go on the frequencies, I experimented with light and I used one of those triple LED bulbs that are controlled with a remote control, and it can generate 15 different colors, including when all the three turn on, you have white, but this allows you to generate, you know, 15 different shades of the colors from the combining the three primary colors. But the quality, when I douse the quality of that energy, it's negative because it's going counterclockwise. So when I made the lenses, I found that the lenses are about a quarter of an inch thick. So one single lens I got, depending on the color, it was only transmuting from 60 to 66% of the energy of a particular color going through the lens. But when I combined it with a second lens, then I was getting 100% change in the spin. And the most interesting thing is that when you're dealing with argon energy, depending on, even though I don't consider myself sensitive, I mean, Derek is like a walking Star Trek tricorder. He can tell you exactly what is. The only thing he hasn't told me is that, oh, this has a nice pinky color and this has a nice reddish. No, that far he hasn't gone. I think he has the capability. He just has to let himself go. But even despite that lack of sensitivity on my part, there are certain conditions and situations where you can detect the presence of the argon. Case in point, the argon concentrator I made using vinyl and stovepipe metal, where it's a cylinder. If you touch the cylinder, it's room temperature. If you're outside, it's going to be cool. If you touch the inside of the cylinder, it's still cool. The whole thing is just room temperature. But if you put your hand in the space inside the cylinder, it feels immediately, you feel hot. That's because the cylinder is concentrating argon all around, concentrating it in the center of the cylinder. And I've had multiple people do this when they come visit me. And I said, just put your hand inside this. And the person and the people goes, oh, but this is hot. And then they touch the cylinder and it's cold. So you can detect when the argon is concentrated enough, you can detect its presence. And some people might feel, different people, of course, we're all different. Some people feel tingling. Some people feel cold. Other people feel warm, depending on the person. So the first thing that I detected when I put the two Shanghai lenses in front of the light source is that even though the LED produces no noticeable heat and the lenses are about like more than 30 inches away from the light source. Because what I did is I mounted the light source inside a tube. So it's almost like a telescope, only it's not for seeing light. It's for projecting light. So the lenses are at the end of the cylinder and they're not exposed to any form of heat at all. Yet when you put your hand in front of the light that's going through the two Shanghai lenses, immediately you feel the warmth on any of the 15 colors. And when I douse that energy, it's always positive. And the plants love it. When you project it on a plant, immediately you'll see the reaction. In a few minutes, the leaves will pick up, the branches will straighten up. So that's how powerful Shanghai is. It's even able to transmute the spin of visible light. And you're dealing with terahertz. That's why I am convinced that Shanghai would eat up 5G for breakfast. The problem with the full 5G crap is that people can protect themselves. What about the rest of life on the planet? You know, what about the flora and the fauna? I mean, are they equipped with Shanghai to? No, that's why that thing can never come to pass. It's just too horrible.
Okay, now let me go back to the light source. Okay, now if you were just trying to attenuate the light signature, couldn't you do it with stickers on the light itself?
Well, the sticker is going to be, I think it's going to be affecting the frequencies put out by the device, but because the stickers are opaque, they're not treating the light itself.
Okay,
I do have stickers on the emitting, but it did not have an impact on the quality of the light. I do have a sticker on the.
Something different is happening beyond attenuation of the signal. So when you've got the stickers on the LED fixture itself, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So the light coming out of it is not being affected, probably because, like you're saying, it's in a frequency much higher. So the electromagnetic waves that are created by the system itself, not the light, we're talking about the system itself, those are attenuated, so they're not dangerous, but the light is would not be affected directly by the sticker. It might be spinning correctly, but it's not, or maybe not, because it's an artificial light source. So then you send it through the lenses, and then you're detecting. So once you got it through you saw that 60% of it was the first lens, 60% of it was now a good signal.
Clockwise.
Okay. And then through the second one, you had 100%. And at that point, you began to feel an orgone buildup. Is that correct?
Yeah, because you could put your hand in front of the lens and not even close. I mean, I kept putting my hand farther and farther away, and I was like 6 feet away from the lens, and I was still detecting the heat. If I removed my hand from the halo of light, because since this is mounted on a straight tube, it's projecting almost in a straight line, because it's not laser, it's just regular colored light. It does diffuse, therefore it projects like a funnel. I mean, if you aim it at a wall, you will see the circular shape. You know, the farther away you move from the wall, the bigger the circle gets, because it's projecting light like in a funnel. So if I put my hand within that area of influence, within the funnel of light, you feel that warmth in your hand. And it didn't matter which color I chose. Some colors might feel a little bit stronger than others, but still you feel that. And it's not a thermal heat, because you go and touch the device and it's as cool as can be. It's just, you know, the LEDs, unless you have some Mondo LED, the amount of heat they put out is barely detectable by your naked hand.
So let's try to we don't want to get into a massive conversation. Let's just make this statement. Orgone is another form of energy that is measurable and detectable, but not by normal means. It's something that needs to be really addressed, and Walt is probably the best in the world at doing this, because he's actually been able to picture it not only in shungite rubber but in shungite resin. So we know that it's very real. We can tell you about it being photographed, and it's a very real concept that he and I talk about a lot. So when you've got the orgone, because essentially what's happened now is that the shungite is more than attenuated it by the spin. It's doing something that, well, maybe it's just the spin now. You've got this light spinning in the right direction, so it's actually acting like an accelerant or an exciter to the orgone that's prevalent in the space around it, correct?
Well, think about it this way. Early on, when we were talking about energy independence, how the shungite is helping you get back your energy, I was making a comment about what I had found. Before I had any device mounted anywhere in the house, I went around dowsing all the energies that come into the house. You know, the water that comes into the house has energy. The natural gas that the furnace and the water heater burn, that's energy in a chemical form. Obviously, the AC power, that's another form of energy. So when I run around the house dowsing the different sources of energy and I ask, what is the quality of this energy? All of it was counterclockwise. So I made the corollary connection that, okay, no wonder city living is degrading to the quality of life, since every energy source that surrounds us is all negative. Instead of giving to us, it's taking from us. That's why people that go on an outing and they spend some time off in the woods feel so re-energized and rejuvenated, because everything around you is giving you a positive spin. The vegetation, the animals, the rocks, the natural light coming from the sun, it's all one huge clockwise rotating field. Therefore, it's reinforcing your own natural clockwise rotating field, which is your human aura. You come into a city environment where everything is going the other way. Instead of giving to you, it's taking from you. So now changing the spin of the light, that you're doing something that's actually giving you energy as opposed to taking it from you, because instead of having negative spinning light, which is going to be degrading to your aura, now you have positive spinning light, which is actually feeding your aura, depending on which color you choose, unless you choose, you know, white. So that's true energy independence, getting back your energy, making everything, all your energy sources, into positive clockwise spinning torsion fields. And that's why the Shanghai has to be, if we're going to continue living in cities and we're going to continue using the energy sources that's available, then Shanghai has to be part of your life, because it's changing all of that, making it positive as opposed to degrading. It's giving you back what should be your natural quality of life.
I know, because like Shanghai is showing us so many different things about enterology as a science, quantum physics, how it interfaces, but it also is doing it without destroying anything. You know?
Oh, correct.
It's like they got all the, oh, okay, this is an example. Dolly was talking about it. She just went over to her daughter's new house, and they can't get cell reception inside the house because they put some layer of blockage in the ceiling, like you would insulation.
Yeah.
And I think that's some kind of a Florida law that says that the new homes have to have a certain amount of protection from EMF, which you think, wow, that's a good thing, right? And that's what I thought. Oh, wow, that's a good thing. But then one of my listeners came and said to me, well, I understand that in actuality, the signals that do get through start bouncing around inside underneath this protective thing, and you end up being in like a microwave.
Well, that's contingent on it being grounded or not. Because here in the Twin Cities, they found the same issue with some buildings, and they weren't clear on what was going on, why they weren't getting cell reception in these. I think it was an apartment building and was featured in the article, and it had to do, only some of the older guys were aware of it. It has something to do with some building code that was way back in the 60s and 70s, where when they poured the stucco on the outside, underneath the stucco, it's chicken wire. So the entire house is enveloped in chicken wire. So that's acting like a Faraday cage, and it's not allowing cellular service to enter into the house. But if it's grounded to ground, then no, it's not an issue. It's not an issue to the people inside, because all signals are being grounded. Anything coming from the outside, it's not bouncing off the chicken and wire. It's going straight into the earth. And any signal being generated inside the house, again, it's being thrown, it's being grounded into the earth. The issue is if you have a floating Faraday cage that's not grounded, then yes, it's like using a cell phone inside an airplane. You know, an airplane is what, an aluminum cylinder with wings? And if you start up a microwave source, well, that microwave isn't going anywhere. It's bouncing inside the plane. So you're getting, you know, a nice cooking tan there. Everybody is getting cooked inside the plane.
I'm so excited because I have one of those chicken coop houses.
Oh, is it grounded? Do you know? That's why I said to Derek when he set up the hive shed, I said, make sure, since the walls are made of metal, they get nice and grounded. Because they're sitting in concrete, I don't know if you know this, concrete is actually an insulator. It doesn't ground anything. You do need proper metallic ground to ground anything. So,
well, I don't think I've got a pipe that's got my chicken wire grounded, no. However, I don't know. I'll have to think about this.
As long as you got continuity all around, all you need to do is ground one spot, unless they're isolated.
They're isolated. They're not attached. They're like panels.
Oh, I see.
It would be insane to try to do something like that.
That's why I was asking Derek, do a continuity test around the perimeter of the building of the hive shed to make sure that there's continuity. If you've got continuity all around, then all you need to do is ground one spot, and that's it. Shed is grounded.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how we're doing it, too. Mm-hmm. Walter, there was a question in chat real quick on something just a little bit back. They were wondering how you created the lenses you were talking about, and then I wanted to add into that. Have you sampled or played with fiber optics at all with maybe shielding those with shungite and I guess I'll leave it there. Played with
fiber optic does not produce any EMF. In fact, that's the beauty of it. In fact, that was the only network solution in a hospital in New York. I've mentioned before that I worked for a company for 11 years doing IT work. And we didn't do this, but at a vendor meeting, we had a chance to sit down and chat with another contractor like us. And he had this anecdote. The vendor meeting was all about networking solutions. And this contractor had a client that was a hospital. And the hospital had two big wings. And the problem that they had is in one of the particular wings, certain times of the day, they would lose network connectivity. And they had just usual, Cat 5 type at the time. In those years, it was Cat 4 twisted wire, 10 megabit per second network. That'll give you an idea of the time frame that I'm talking about. So the guys they found that between the two wings, there was a room where they had the MRI machine. And unfortunately, the cables going from one wing to the other wing of the hospital were in the wall. One of the walls was part of the chamber where this MRI machine is housed. So the engineers thought, okay, let's get rid of the Cat 5 and we'll put coax. Because, coax is a big grounding sheath. And inside the center of this grounding sheath goes the wire that has the signaling. So the coax is naturally grounded. Fine. Okay, so they put that up. Same thing. During the times of the day where the technicians were doing MRIs on patients, they would lose network connectivity. It wasn't as extreme as before, but it was there. And it was bothering those offices that needed network connectivity. So after everything was said and done and they did all the testing and everything, they figured out the only solution at the time, which was very expensive because it was just coming into market, was fiber optics, because light is immune to intense magnetic fields. It just goes through them. And that was the only thing that they were able to do to connect one wing of the hospital to the other, is use fiber optics in the walls of the room where the MRI equipment was housed. And all the problems stop because light, fiber optics does not produce any EMF unless you're looking at the conversion unit. Because given the speed difference, I mean, you understand that fiber optics is gigabits per second speed. And I don't want to get blasted for this. I do know that they have achieved gigabit speeds in copper by using multiple pairs, not the usual two pairs, But that's an expensive solution, and not everybody is implementing that. But I'm just going standard Ethernet, two-pair communication, 100 megabit network. And when you're connecting, and you let's put it this way. Let's say you're working at an office, in an office building. What's coming into your machine in a standard office? I'm not going, you know, super special, super fancy, you know, spy movie type office. Just regular, good old American office. In present day technology, chances are 99% of the time, what's coming to your computer that's sitting on your desk is going to be two pair, 100 megabit network, which is still copper. So what happens is if the data coming into the building is coming into fiber optic, that has to be converted from that extreme speed down to 100 megabit in order to feed it to your machine at your desk. So that that conversion unit can and does put out EMF because it's converting, you know, very high data speed coming in the form of light, converting it into electronic pulses in order to feed it to the copper wires. So that part of the equation there would be EMF there, and it's a good thing to treat it because Shungite makes all forms of electronic equipment because of this spin change. It makes them more efficient. It reduces that entropy that wears down electronic components because all semiconductors suffer from the same problem, age. Semiconductors degrade over time. So with the Shungite, the lifetime of any semiconductor-based device would be greatly extended.
Let me just break in here for a second because I just thought about my refrigerator. Now that refrigerator, my gosh, it's at least 22, 23 years old. And when I got the Shungite, it was like 20 years old and it had got that boom, boom, boom. And you told me it had something to do with the gas and I don't know what. But I put the Shungite on it and the sucker hasn't done that in years, and it's running as efficient as it ever did. I mean, it's like Shungite is truly amazing. Now, going back to the this is not an electronic device; it's a simple electrical device. But going back to the fiber optics, my understanding is that fiber optics is actually glass.
It's lucite. It's a flexible. The what's needed. Let me back out here. Yes, in the first few generations, when they were playing around with fiber optics, yes, glass was part of the equation. But early on, they found how incredibly expensive it was because it was brittle. There were limitations on how you could bend it. There were limitations on how long you could extend an arm. So the industry didn't stop researching. And that's why you see fiber optics is the same. The origin of the material is the same material you use in CDs and DVDs where you need perfect transparency. Because when you're looking at a CD and you see that shiny mirror-like surface, what you're looking at is a microscopic layer of aluminum embedded in a body of lucite. And if you had a microscope, you look at the surface of the aluminum encased in it, you would see little bumps and valleys, like little mountains and valleys. Those are the ones and zeros. That's how they get encoded onto the surface of the metal. And when you have a recordable CDR, the aluminum is completely flat, and the laser in your recordable drive is creating all those bumps and valleys. It's encoding the data onto the surface of that. So the material is lucite, and it has transparency just like glass, but it has a certain amount of flexibility. And even then, you can't do a 90-degree turn on fiber optics. If you look at any fiber optic installation, you will see that, yes, there are bends in the fiber, but they are big bends. I mean, large radius. You can't just bend it at 90-degree angle and expect it to work. It's not a piece of wire. And for that reason, there are different grades of fiber optics. There is the traditional fiber optic, which is several fibers clumped together. Then there's another one where if you look at a cross section of the fiber optic wire, it looks like a six pointed star, and there are fibers in between each arm of the star, and there are fibers in the center. So what you're creating is a multiple fiber conduit. And what that does is that not only is it giving you a greater pathway for the light, but it's also compensating if any fibers crack, because that's the only thing that kills the signal. If you have a crack in the transparent material, that crack is creating refraction and diffraction. So that's damaging the integrity of the data information. So they've never stopped researching and improving and making it better and more efficient.
So if you tried to put shungite in the lucite, the shungite would actually diffract the signals.
You're affecting the quality of that light. So, but since the light doesn't give off any, that's one of the things about the fiber optics. It's almost like dealing with a dark room in photography. You know, the dark room, you can't even allow a little pinprick of light to enter, because otherwise it will affect your negatives when you, and that's why many labs hire blind people, because blind people move quite naturally, uncomfortably in a dark room, and they don't need any light to get their work done. The same thing goes for, you know, fiber optics. The entire path from point A to point B has to be completely opaque. Nothing can escape. If you have any leakage in light, you're going to damage the integrity of the data. So it's not giving off anything that's going to affect anybody.
Yeah, but I'm wondering about, you know, being able to, I don't know what. I just feel that if we're using all of this stuff, you know, maybe to add shungite to it so that when it comes off of the, does anything, it's going to change everything.
Like I said, the converter unit would make the system more efficient.
Yeah. Interesting. How the hell did we get on
that? I was wondering
subject?
About the light. Well, actually, I was going to bring him back around to the colors, thinking, because as Walton mentioned that the frequencies coming off of light and artificial light and the differences there, I was wondering if maybe the fiber optics was coming off a light source and then wrapped the fiber optic in shungite. And so I'm trying to figure out a way to use the colors, as you were mentioning. People can use the colors of light for healing, for warmth, for different uses, but we don't necessarily want that negative spin on it. You were talking earlier about the colors and whatnot. It was running through my head thinking, well, how can we tie in fiber optics? And because they don't have the EMF moving through them, wouldn't we end up with just the photon or the light on the other end, maybe?
Well, it's just information. It's not like somebody's going to use the light and fiber optics for healing or anything. It's not like the light is, it's not like you have a, what do you call it? If you had, like, let's say the wire itself, the fiber optic wire that's connecting, you know, point A to point B, let's say it went transparent and it's shining all day long. Well, I wouldn't want to be exposed to that light all day long if I'm sitting in my desk and this wire is going across the wall. And all day long, it's blinking at high frequency, and well, I don't want to be exposed to that light. But like I said, all of that, the medium has to be opaque to the outside. You can't have any leakage of light, otherwise you're degrading the quality of the data. So there's not a health risk at all, and it doesn't put out any EMF.
So, okay. I have another quick question for you, too, regarding so somebody's asking about, and I was thinking the same thing, chicken wire, let's say around your garden or – so it wouldn't necessarily be covered over the top. Do you see any issues with that? But I would think maybe
this cover over the top.
Well, there would be nothing over the top, let's say. So just a fenced in area like my garden. But I think it wouldn't be an issue for anything because of the stakes that the metal chicken wire is attached to are grounded. So in essence, it's just
if the top is open, that will allow signals to come in.
But there'd be no buildup of any kind. So you wouldn't necessarily be making an area capturing any frequencies or something harmful. So that's just basically what I was asking, is if you thought there would be something, some negative effect using the metal wiring, for instance, around a garden. But I would think because it is all grounded, it wouldn't really be an issue.
Oh, it's just going to be grounding. You know, if there are any signals coming from above, they will not be captured because, again, it's directional. And a Faraday cage is exactly that. It's a cage in all in all directions.
Sure.
Lengthwise, widthwise, heightwise. That you have to, all three directions are blocked with a grid work. And a Faraday cage also, one of the things that has to be taken into account, what is wanting to be shielded? Because chicken wire has, I know chicken wire, despite its large opening, it does block cellular service. But I had my, it was my understanding that depending on the size of the grid, how big are the openings, it had something, it was commensurate to what types of frequencies you wanted to capture or pass through or something like that. So I knew that if you, instead of chicken wire, let's say, you know, a mosquito netting that you use on Windows, for example.
Sure.
That mosquito netting, if you put that inside walls and you and let's say it's made of aluminum, obviously, and you put it inside the walls and you ground it, that's going to capture even far more than cellular service because it's so, the openings are so tiny.
Sure.
The tinier the opening on the grid work is, the more, the higher the frequencies that you're capturing. So that they had one, this came out in a magazine, but it's got to be like 2 decades ago, where something had to be done regarding tall buildings around airports, because they had an issue that since, you know, humans keep building up and building up and building up, many airports around the country, JFK in New York, for example, when they were first built, they were in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you had to drive there for half an hour from the city or more just to get to the airport because it was nothing but fields. And JFK is right next to the Jamaica Bay, so it's swampland and water. It's just empty fields all around. But as man keeps building and building and building, an issue had crept over the years that the tall buildings surrounding what would be considered the official territory of an airport was affecting ground radar and air traffic because they were getting a lot of echoes. So this is not good because you're getting echoes. So there was a company that developed this graphite-based mesh, and the purpose of it, let's say they build a tall apartment building or hotel or whatever it is, this mesh gets its part underneath the outer wall of the thing, whether it be stucco or brick or whatever, it gets embedded under the outer skin of the building, and it's grounded, the graphite. And what happens is all the radar signals coming from the airport, they don't bounce off of the buildings; they get sucked right into the earth. So then that way, the echoes that they're seeing in their screens, it's all from the aircraft. Nothing's bouncing off of the buildings. So I know that's been around for decades. I just don't know. I guess if you're building yourself a house, you could buy that material, but it's not metal. It's graphite. They had some explanation why it needed to be graphite, but I don't recall right now.
Well, graphite's not very far from shungite.
Yeah, think about that. Plus, graphite doesn't rust. One of the problems with steel solutions is depending on you're living. If you're living close to the ocean where you have a lot of, you know, salty humidity in the air, there's a lot of corrosion on exposed metals, even metals that are inside something else. Humidity does creep into walls and things. So corrosion would end up killing your continuity if that happens. So there are many reasons to go with graphite. That's not going to rust.
Okay, I got a question for you. How do we, because you've got a lot of people that are into light therapy, and I'm sure if they heard what you just said, they'd be going like, how do I bring this to my modality? How can I get a hold of these lenses or do whatever? Have you got some kind of a concept of how you can make this something that can be usable by these light techs?
Well, the thing is that it would all everything would be contingent on what fixture is being used for the light. Because there's another concept that's out there that's being used by other practitioners, like this gentleman. What was his last name? Is Jordan, the man who did the healing. Remember the healings and meditations with JP, Frank Jordan.
Mark Jordan. Mm-hmm.
He uses the same technique that's used by this other. There's a man in Brazil who sells this bed. I think it's called a chakra bed, where there are seven lights on top of the bed, and each light shines a different color, and the practitioner is supposed to line them up and point them to the different chakras in the person's body. And the principle that these folks are using is they put a crystal in front of the light, so you're not getting hit by the light directly from the source of light. The light is going through a quartz crystal, and that's what's hitting you. And their claim is that because the light is shining through the crystal, they call that crystal energy. I don't have a crystal to put in front of a source of light right now, so I would have to do that and douse it and see if that's true. Is it crystal energy? What is the spin of it? What is the quality of it? I don't have I used to have a lamp that you would mount thing, but I gave that away. I guess I got hooked on Shanghai.
But you could develop lenses for it. Okay, what I'm saying here is that I know you're very busy. However, there's probably a light practitioner out there that might like to contact you and work with you to develop, you know, a lens for whatever system they're using so that we can test out, you know, empirically.
If I get a picture of the fixture and I can get dimensions of, okay, what fixture are you using? What are the dimensions of it? Then anything can be made. Look at you guys with your wall plates. You came across the problem that there are different sizes and different standards of wall plates.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
The same thing is going to happen with light fixtures. There are so many out there. I need specs in order to make something for it.
But it would be very interesting to take it to the next step. You know, what does this mean on the human body? Because again, okay, we started talking about the book in the beginning of this thing, and what I find so impressive about Shungite is that it demonstrates what I call enterology, the study of energy. And in doing so, kind of brings together, because enterology brings together quantum physics with metaphysics. And in both cases, there's a tremendous, pushback by those of the mechanical world of Newtonian science. And yet, every religion, every Native American, or Native culture, all of the true connected psychic, you know, metaphysical, spiritual individuals, they all have to make this connection to nature to get where they want to go. And to me, Shungite is so demonstrative of so many aspects of nature that we as technically learned people, you know, have a difficult problem seeing. Oh, if you prove it to me, show me a measurement of whatever, you know. And Shungite gives us the opportunity to test and measure. It's one thing to talk about energy and spin and frequency and all this other stuff. It's another thing to say, put the magnet on your refrigerator and you're going to save FPL, your Florida, your electric bills. You know, and that's what it's giving us, Walt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so,
yeah, well, look at it this way, for example. You have, everybody understands the concept of energy. So you have energy here. We'll put energy here on the right. And everybody understands the concept of matter. So we have matter here on the left. What's in the middle? You know, what would marry these two things?
Shungite.
That's the only way I see when you look at shungite, because look at a living being. I mean, they know scientifically, precisely down to the microgram, what elements make up a human body. And you can put all that in a bucket. Does that make a human being? No. Can you make it come to life? No. What's missing? Well, it's missing the energy. It's missing the soul. It's missing the consciousness. Oh, okay. So there's something missing. So you, just the matter itself, it's not enough. And that's such a thing that people have a hard time understanding. Okay. Where is the marriage? Where is the middle point where these things meet? Well, you, for example, you're a living being. You are that meeting. You are the meeting of spirit and matter. That's why I get it. I know the reason why the old gurus used to insist so much on going back to God, going back to source, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know. I get it. The reason they were preaching that is because for thousands of years, humanity has been held in bondage and slavery. So they're teaching people how to get out of this matrix jail. But in the ultimate sense, this is not a jail. This is how God experiences what it created. For example, you paint a beautiful picture and it's breathtaking. The world loves it. I mean, it goes on every TV show. This is the most amazing picture of it all. But all you can do is look at it. You can't live it. You can't experience it because you're outside of the picture. How do you put yourself inside your picture? You become a part of it. So this is all of us together, not just me, not just you, everybody, even the homeless guy sleeping in the gutter somewhere in a city street. This is God consciousness experiencing itself. I was the source of all of this, and I gave my children creative powers so they could continue where I left off. This is, I'm experiencing what has been made. Is it good? Is it bad? That's a human judgment, because there are no bad experiences. It's just experiences. But we like to put values on things, and we like to put them up on shelves, and we like to say, oh, this is good and this is bad. That's my pet peeve when people use the word perfection, because the word perfection is the epitome of the binary system, duality. Because in order for something to be perfect, how do you tell? It has to be compared to something that you consider imperfect. And if we say that God is everything, God cannot be perfect, because God has to be everything, the perfect and the imperfect. Correct? Unless you have an imperfect God, that's only half of the equation.
That's a good point.
Wow, good thoughts to leave people with, hey? Why don't you give your website so that people know where they can go, and if they're interested in these lenses or just interested. Walt's got so many different devices and ways of interacting with reality that you ought to go just look and give them your address.
That would be newparadigmtools.net. So tools is with an S, it's plural. Newparadigmtools.net.
Or just Google Walt Silva.
And also Nancy in her website has links to my website as well.
Right. We do. Derek, anything else? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I'm fascinated as always with Walt's mind, and I appreciate him coming on, and he always gives us so many things to think about. So I'm already grabbing crystals and flashlights and shining them through it and playing things.
Yeah, you're the perfect candidate for that because of the way that you are, that you're such a sensor. But the one thing that I would say to you, since you told me you had those huge wands that you got from Wish, I like to use the Jim Self's rose technique for purifying the crystals. I know that a lot of people have different, some people put them, they bury them in the ground. Some people put them in a natural water current. Some people put them out in the sun. I found that to me the best and the fastest is the rose visualization, where you visualize a rose before you, preferably white, and then you let the rose float up and down or inside any object you want to purify. And in your mind's eye, you look at the rose and you notice this beyond your control. You're not controlling it. The white begins to get dirty as it picks up stuff. And I always ask it, take everything that does not belong to this crystal. Because before you buy a crystal, it has gone through so many hands.
Sure.
And everyone is leaving a little mark behind. So once the rose is done absorbing anything, I just shoot it out into the air, like into the sky, and let it blow up like fireworks. And then all that energy will go back to their source in a neutral way. And that way the crystal is being left clear. Because if the crystal is chock full of thought forms and intentions and whatnot, it will affect the quality of the light going through it. So it behooves you, if you're going to do light experiments, that the crystals be as clear as possible. So then your read will be the legitimate read. Okay, what is this? If I shine the same source through amethyst, I get this. And if I shine it through citrine, I get this. And if I shine it through clear quartz, I get this. You will have accurate reads, and you can document all of that stuff for yourself.
But you only need to use the rose if you don't have shungite. Listen,
well, the same thing with shungite. You have to tell it, you know, clear this crystal of everything that does not belong to it.
We're at the top of the hour, so I'm going to have to hang up on you guys. But we will be back, you and I, Walt, at 6 to 8. And Derek, thank you so very much. Appreciate you.
Oh, sure. Either one of you
want to say anything to the audience as we go?
Oh, thank you, love you, audience, always for your infinite patience with us babbling guys. thank you for being here.
And I appreciate all the input they share and all the questions they ask. It helps out. No, thank you.
Absolutely. All right, then we're out of here. And again, thank you, guys.
You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Haggishack Radio.